Alrighty, hello there, and welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Tim Kearns may or may not be here tonight once again. He has some issues that he has to take care of at the moment. However, we will be joined by a couple of old friends, talking some hockey and some basketball as well, as Winthrop High School hockey coach and NHL agent Dale Dunbar will give us his opinion on the playoffs, the NHL playoffs, and the Bruins, of course. And we'll check in later on with Mike Grenier, who will talk some Celtics basketball and some NBA basketball as well. And don't forget, in the morning, around about 8 o'clock, the Salem News Sports Writers drops here on MSO, as Bill Newell hosts that program every week with Phil Stacey, the executive sports editor of the Salem News, along with Matt Williams, assistant executive sports editor, Nick Giannino, the sports writer at the Salem News, and Nick Kukuru, who was the sports editor at the Gloucester Daily Times. And they'll be talking a lot of local high school sports, of course, and other stuff, too. And don't forget, too, also, at the end of the week, around Thursday, it's Nick and Nick, as the sports desks shows will be presented once again around, early in the morning. It's North Shore Sports Desk with Dominic DeCastro and Nick Kukuru, and then also the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, and that's right here on MSO News Sports. If you want to get a hold of us, email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Just want to make one comment here before we get started. We're going to talk with Dale Dunbar first, and man, I learn something every time I listen to him. Tremendous hockey coach and fan of the game. He just loves hockey and loves to talk about it and explain it and loves teaching it to high school kids as well. I was watching a little bit of the 2011 Stanley Cup series that the Bruins were in. And interestingly enough, the play-by-play announcer on TV sounds nothing like the play-by-play announcer on TV now for our local sports cable network. And it's the same guy. And if you look back at 2011, he actually broadcast the game. He talked about the players. He actually talked about, you know, what was going on in front of you as it happened. Totally different presentation now. And I'm not going to say whether I like it or not, but it's just different. If you go back, and I think it was on YouTube, it might have been on SN itself, but I think it might have been YouTube too. Just check out the 2011 Stanley Cup series with the Bruins and see if you can find out the Bruins' actual broadcast of it. And critique the announcing then. Anyway, just kind of an interesting little note there. He sounds nothing now like he did then. And I prefer the old 2011 version myself. At any rate, let's see. Yeah, interesting news in the world of media, of course. We'll leave that for Tim Kearns to talk about if he comes on board at some point. However, locally, only a couple of local scores in at the moment. In baseball, St. John's Prep took it on the chin today. BC High winning that one by a score of 16-2. And the only other score I have in locally for baseball is Lynn Classical shutting out Chelsea by a score of 12-0. In softball, Peabody Tanners continue winning as they beat Marblehead today by a score of 8-2. And I don't know if Ms. Betancourt got another no-hitter today, but she had, what, three in a row last week? So just an amazing string by the Peabody Tanners right now. And in girls lacrosse, we have three scores in. Pawtucket 18, Hamilton Wenham 10. Georgetown over North Reading 18-6. And Manchester Essex beating Triton 15-4. So those are the scores that we have at the moment. Hope to have some more later on. And also I'd like to remind you, or at least point out, that on the website we have a couple of brand new posts today. That went up with high school coaches. The first is with Gloucester High School baseball coach Rory Gentile. And, you know, if this were a pro game, you'd say that Gloucester is rebuilding. They're in a learning phase right now, and they won a close game over Newburyport on the weekend, coming from behind and ending up with a walk-off win. So coach is happy about that, and the kids will be playing a tough one on Wednesday as they travel up to Masconomet, which is unbeaten at the moment at 6-0. Also talk with Newburyport High School girls lacrosse coach Catherine Batchelder, as Newburyport is 6-0 as well. They had two big games, non-league games recently. They went up to, they stayed home and played the defending New Hampshire Division II state champions, Portsmouth High School, on Saturday, I believe it was, and They won that one rather handily, did Newburyport. And, of course, if you know the story at Newburyport, Coach Batchelder with numerous Cape Ann League titles, also a state championship and a couple of other Division II North, or Division I North, rather, championships, or at least, championships, that's what it was then. And they play a very difficult schedule coming up at the end of the season as they get back into Cape Ann League action this week. They play Ipswich on Tuesday. So you might want to check that one out. Talking with Coach Batchelder, she talks about her kids and gives an idea of who the leaders are and how the team is performing at the moment. All right, coming up, we'll have our guest, Dale Dunbar, talking primarily about the Bruins, but also about the playoffs in general. This is MSO News Sports. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. Our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and Tim Kearns could be with us, or maybe not. I don't know. We'll find out later on. Anyway, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, we're back now with Dale Dunbar, Winthrop High School hockey coach, NHL agent, and all-around good guy. And, Coach, welcome back to MSO. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rick. How are you?
Oh, the same, man, the same. I don't even know. Well, I do know where to start. I'm going to start with two names, Patrice Bergeron and Taylor Hall. Not Bergeron, excuse me. I'm going to start with give me a minute here. I'm so excited. Brad Marchand. I miss Patrice Bergeron, but Brad Marchand, Coach, you talked about him a couple of weeks ago. You know, I was all upset and worried he wasn't scoring goals, but he's been the captain without the captain being there.
Yeah, I mean, and I told you back then. I said, don't worry about him. He'll come alive, and when he does, he'll take off because he's very streaky.
Mm-hmm.
And he is. I mean, he's right now he's carrying this team. You know, he's built for the playoffs. He's such a great player, and right now he's all over the ice and he's in every situation, and he's a leader.
He's also in my estimation matured in terms of what it takes to do in the playoffs, because they've been goading him, he's been needled, he's been cross-checked and all this other stuff, and he's kept his cool, and he's made, again, I look at his back checking and his passes. He's just, he just doesn't seem to miss a shift at all.
Right. Well, when you look at it, I'm sure, coaches call you in before and say, listen, we need you on the ice, not in the penalty box. So, don't get sucked into any penalties, or don't let your game get away from you. You're playing great. All those things are going to, putting him in the right frame of mind. But you're right. I think the maturation process for him is in effect. All the things he used to do, he doesn't do anymore. He actually Brady Kachuk's doing it, and he's taking himself out of the series and out of games. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
By taking stupid penalties. So yeah, I think the maturation process for Marchant is really front and center. He's so valuable. You can't afford to have him in the box and let somebody, from their third or fourth line goat you into a penalty and now you're off the ice.
Well, it seems to be a trickle-down effect, because I've been reading, I think it's in the Globe, they quote Marchand a lot about talking about Patrice Bergeron and how, he respects him and he plays, they know each other's thoughts on the ice and everything else. But I just think... some of the stuff I hear, read about, and all this other stuff, Coach, during watching sports, it's like, don't you just enjoy, can't you just enjoy the game? And it's like watching this playoffs, win or lose. I mean, my Lord, what talent, what speed and all this other stuff. And I just, we'll talk about Marshawn, Bergeron another time, but, you know, I'm so happy to see, Marshawn sort of, take the reins and, you know, sort of embed the C over the A. But, I want to talk about Taylor Hall too, Coach, because I know you know him very well. And man, since he's been back, he's been just dynamite.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor's a dynamic player. I mean, he's another one that, you know, he's a streaky player. You know, he got 4 points the other day. He's chipping in now. He looks like he's back to his form. But he's another one that's streaky. And even when he's not scoring, you know, he plays a good, hard two-way game. But, you know, having him in the lot back in the lineup, it's almost like you're giving, you know, paying Peter right now to rob from Paul, whatever the thing is, because yeah. you're losing Krejci, you get Hall back, you know, now you're getting Foligno back, you're losing Bergeron. You know, it seems to be if you can get them all together mm-hmm. again, you know, it's going to be a pretty scary lineup with its depth and talent to beat. But while they're out, their next man up philosophy is front and center, and these other guys are really chipping in. But one that has surprised me the most has been Charlie Coyle.
Yep.
I mean, Coyle went from third, fourth line center, you know, checking line to the number one center with these guys out. And I think his game with the opportunity and all this extra ice, I mean, he's playing outstanding. I think he's one of the best players on the whole ice, and he's an exceptional penalty killer as well. So I think, you know, other guys are moving up and getting more rights and opportunity, and they're seizing the moment. And when these guys come back, you know, everybody can slip right back into their roles and, you know, be pretty scary.
Tell me what you think about the physical aspect of the game, because Coyle's a pretty big dude. And I know it looked to me like we talked about this before. That Florida wanted to take the Bruins out of the game with chippy shots or whatever, and they're big. They got some big dudes, and they got some guys who like to harass you. But you know, Coyle's a big dude, and Bertuzzi has come in there and just added to the mix.
Well, I mean, you know, people have knocked how the Bruins have drafted, and rightfully so in some case. But what they've done to put the pieces, you know, together to make a run for the Stanley Cup, and who they brought in with, you know, Orlov, Bertuzzi, Hathaway, you know, I mean, it's amazing how they got such character guys away from other teams and slotted them in and have had such a great success. You know, I just think, Bertuzzi's been an unbelievable addition for this team. And, you know, I hope they sign him long term because he deserves it. But I'll be honest with you. I think like some Bruins fans were or are, I was a little worried going back to Florida. You know, they beat mm-hmm. you decisively in
right.
Boston.
Right.
Two of their regular season losses out of the 12 were to Florida
mm-hmm.
and 3 out of 13 losses were to Florida. So, you know, you knew they wanted to beat you up. You knew they wanted to come at you, get you off your game. Actually, I think they've done a good job with that to Pastrnak. I mean, you know, you never say the guy disappears, but he's not getting the chances or the ice to make those plays that he did during the regular season because, you know, they're hacking him, they're whacking him, they're getting in his face. But he's done a great job, too, of staying out of it. But I think the first series is the toughest. It's as tough as the last series to try to close somebody out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think once the Bruins get by this first series, you know, God willing, I think you'll see everybody come back and fit right back in and really, really take it to other teams.
Yeah, and it's pretty weird how some teams match up well against other teams, and Florida certainly matches up well against the Bruins. You know, and as you say, they were 2-2 in the regular season, the only team to even come close to that for the regular season against the Bruins. But, Coach, I want to ask you about the league in general because I don't think I've ever seen anything like it in this first round. On this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, there were 8 playoff games. 4 of them ended up in overtime, and 3 of those were double overtime. And I don't usually get that interested in the other teams until they play the Bruins, but I was watching these games. And man, if you don't enjoy this as a fan, you got something wrong with you.
Well, you can ask any person, even if they hockey isn't there first. You know, I was talking to a guy the other day, you know, he said, you know, I'm a basketball guy, he said, but I'm glued to NHL playoff hockey. He said, there's just nothing like it. And he said, you know, what they go through to win the Stanley Cup, which is the toughest trophy in all of sports, given it could take you conceivably 28 games to win it if every season is won. And I think the year the Bruins won in 11, I think it went 26 or 27 games.
Wow, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you can take the, you know, the layman hockey fan and they turn into a fanatic during the playoffs, and rightfully so. I mean, it's played at such a different level, and it's just so fast, so physical, and very exciting. I mean, I think you have so many skilled players in the game today, you can turn on any game and just be glued to it. So it's great for the sport.
Yeah, I did that the other day. I was just channel hopping, and I'm going in, and these games are going in overtime. So holy cow. And watching that was just fabulous. And, you know, we're not going to go too far down the road. We got to stay with this series. But what do you see, Dale? Are there any weaknesses in the Florida game that the Bruins can exploit, you know, in the next game?
Well, you know, I think they just got to keep, you know, I think, Florida's game plan was to come out and bully them. You know, try to, you know, make them uncomfortable, hack them, whack them, get them after whistles, and just get them off their game. Get them, don't let them get in a rhythm. But I, from what I see in the past two games, the pushback from the Bruins has been great. You know, they're going at the bully instead of letting the bully come at them.
Mm-hmm.
And when Tkachuk got leveled by McAvoy in that in the slot, I believe it was in the second or third period. You know, like that, and taking Tkachuk out of his game rather than let him take you out of your game. The pushback has been giving the Bruins a lot of confidence to play, you know, that physical game right back at them, which now you're pushing them back. Now you're getting your opportunities. You know, they're playing more dirty in front of the net, you know, getting to those dirty areas rather than perimeter. And that's where the goals are.
Hey, I want to ask you about that, because that's what I noticed too, is that this team is particularly tough in tight around the, they're in the corners and out front, aren't they? I mean, they do get dirty goals, and that's because of tenaciousness, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you talk about all the time, pucks to the net. You know, there's no such thing as a bad shot. You know, as long as it's on net, anything can happen, deflections, you know, rebounds, but you have to be in position to get them, and that's going to be, you know, inside the house, inside the, you know, the scoring area, and it's a dirty place to be, especially if you're cutting into the net or, you know, trying to get rebounds. You're going to be getting hacked and whacked and cross-checked. That's where the coverage comes in, and you know, again, I think the Bruins have done a great job at going there now and not letting Florida, you know, keep them outside. They're getting inside. They're getting those chances. Just like that first goal the other night, or second goal that Marshawn caught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he's not there, that whistle blows. But he kept going at it and going at it. So, yeah, the Bruins are, you know, they're playing the physical game now. They can play any game you want, but I think in the playoffs it even rises to another level.
As a coach, Dale, I want your comments on the end of the game, or the last 2 or 3 minutes when Ullmark got into it. I don't know if he took his helmet off. I think he did, but he threw his gloves down slashing whoever it was who slashed him first. Now you lose a guy for 10 minutes. Okay, misconduct. You lose your goalie for 10 minutes. It's at the end of the game. But tell me your comments on that. What does it tell you about Ullmark, about the series, about the team, or whatever?
Well, again, you're talking about domain, and that's his domain. And he's not going to let guys get in there and have free shots at it or take liberties with him. I believe there was 3 and change left when he dropped his gloves, and, you know, you know, they had a 2 or 3 goal lead at that point.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, you know what?
you got to give him all the kudos in the world, you know, because he's not going to stand for it. And once again, he's not going to let guys go through there untouched. You know, Billy Smith back in the day for the Islanders, they won their cups. They were the toughest guys in the league, not even coming close to the front of that crease because they knew they were getting, you know, a slash on the back of their legs that would take them right down.
Yeah.
He was nasty.
But, I remember that. Yep. And the game that they lost, Coach Montgomery was talking about catastrophic turnovers. But, Dale, you know, in the course of a season, whether it's high school, college, the juniors or whatever, or the pros, you're going to have a game where it just doesn't work, where stuff just doesn't mesh. And the excellence that this team has showed all season long, they were kind of due for a bad game, weren't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, you're not going to – I mean, I'd always rather win dirty than lose, you know, pretty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just going to have those games. You're in a seven-game series. You know, you're playing every other night. You're playing the same team, so there's grudge matches. There's everything that goes into it. And, you know, in that game, it got away from them. That's all. But Montgomery's such a good guy, good coach, and, you know, a good, he gets in your head. You know, you got to have short-term memory. You got to just change the channel in your head, forget about it. They beat us. It's over. Park it. We're not getting anything back from it. So let's move on, talk about what we need to, mm-hmm. how we need to regroup for the next game. And I think that's what he's masterful at, that from what I see, changing that mood rather than letting it linger and, you know, point fingers at anybody. You know, they're a team. I mean, they win as a team, they lose as a team. Nobody's pointing fingers. Even in defeat, these guys know that, hey, listen, you know, they'll all look at themselves and say, we messed up as a team. Let's just get it back. And, again, I think coaching has been tremendous with this group.
I'm not going to keep you much longer, but I know that I listened every now and then. I listen for a minute or two on Boston Sports Radio, and I don't know why I do, but I try it every now and then. And there was when he changed up all the lines going into the next game, there was just such consternation. People were on the radio were just screaming, you know, what are you doing? You're panicking, blah 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 blah. And then they come out and they dominate. The guys on the bench kind of know what they're doing, as opposed to the guys in the booth.
Well, you know, he shut that media up so much. So the guys just look for the littlest in to create controversy. You know, he just glues that shut. You know, he's a great coach. He knows his combinations. He knows the guys he needs to put together. He doesn't have to worry about anybody, you know, outside of that locker room, you know, confirming anything, because what he does stays in house. The way he may juggle a line, listen, if someone's nose is out of joint, it's not about them, it's about the team and the playoffs, and adjustments are constantly made. But you know, the public, you know, the fan, the guy that listens to the radio, the guy that's whatever, they're the ones that, you know, think there's panic. There's no panic. These guys don't panic. They're just trying to get back to their game and regroup.
God.
And he's done it every time. I don't think they've lost two games in a row, have they?
I think they did lose two. They've not lost three. But I don't even know if that happened. You're right.
And on the road. But
could be.
Again, that's pretty amazing out of, you know, out of 80-some-odd games.
I know. And finally, Dale, I have to ask you, it's been such a pleasure, you know, working, talking with you, and learning from you over the years as a high school coach. And then when you talk about all other sports, I want you to tell us about how to watch a hockey game if you don't exactly know what you're looking at, because you can get such joy out of this sport and understand. In my opinion, it's the hardest damn game there is, because you're on these two little tiny blades, you know, and these big dudes are coming at you, and you got a stick and all this other stuff. But there's so much joy in watching a game, win, lose, or draw. And in the playoffs, what's your advice to people, casual people, or people, some of these guys who just want to look at all the bad stuff, who don't know what they're looking at? What's your advice to enjoy these games?
I just think just what you're saying. Just watch and appreciate how great these guys are. I mean, they make passes in such tight areas. They can make aerial passes, their escapability, just the absolute skill in these guys to make, you know, couple to three passes in a row and it's in the net. or the big save. You can't even appreciate this game watching it on TV when you see somebody coming down the wing and taking a 95-mile-an-hour slap shot and the goalie just gloves it or sticks it away. I mean, to be down there on the ice, you realize these guys have no time to make plays hardly. And the physicality of getting hit, you see it on TV, wow, that guy got hit. Try to go down ice level and see exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Again, to see some of the plays that are being made out there defensively, offensively, I mean, these guys are the best in the world, and they make it look easy at times, and it's not easy, as we know. So I just think just watching the game, just enjoy it and appreciate how fast it is, how much these guys are laying their bodies on the line to block shots that are coming at you 90 miles an hour. You know, it's all for a cup, you know, and it's and a ring, and they'll sacrifice anything to get it. So I think just appreciate the athleticism, how hard it is to play, you know, four rounds of hockey with little rest and a lot of travel. And, it's just great. Like I said before, I talked to so many people that just love playoff hockey, and they don't watch it a lot during the season, which is amazing.
It's been nuts, yeah. I got one final question, Dale. Sorry, but I got to ask it while I got you. The tip in guys in front, to me that looks so difficult. As you say, guys back at the point shooting the puck 90 miles an hour or beyond, and you got a guy in front and he knows how to position his stick. How do you master that? Do you work on that in high school?
You concentrate on going to the net, stick on the ice, trying to get you. We always try to say get your stick on the puck. But, you know, the defenseman's job is to not get shots blocked. So, you know, do not get a shot blocked at the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just get it through. So defensemen, they're not shooting to score most of the time as much as they're shooting to get it on net so you can get a second or a third chance out of it. Because these goalies are great. I mean, they're responsible to make the first save. Anything after that, you know, you're trying to clear it out. But these guys that are fighting through traffic and getting a stick on the puck like Bertuzzi's yesterday, you know, it's amazing at how they can even get it on a stick on a puck because it's moving so fast.
Right.
But, you know, you see how, again, you got to get to those areas to even get that, you know. But I just marvel. First of all, I don't think high sticking a puck into the net should be called back.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. I don't think, you know, your stick should have to be below the crossbar. I don't believe in that because it's such an art, you know, to try to get your stick on it. So if your stick is way up high, what's the difference? You know, you got a stick on that puck and it went in. Who cares how high it was? That's one thing I wish they would change. It doesn't really matter to me how high it was. If you can get a stick on a puck,
really,
go in the net.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a great goal.
No, you're right, and it's an art, man.
It's different than kicking a puck in, which is obviously you don't do that.
Right.
That I can see being called back for a high stick infraction. I think it's a waste of time to even review these things. Anything that can go in the net other than being kicked or gloved in or directed in, you know, aside from your stick, I think should be a good goal.
Great point. And I never thought of that, but damn it, of course you're right. I love it. It's such an art. Hey, Coach, I know you got to go, and I kept you a long time, but I want to do it again as these series progress.
Anytime.
Thanks, Dale. I appreciate it. Be well.
All right, buddy.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Dale Dunbar, who is the Winthrop High School hockey coach and an NHL agent as well. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, thanks to Dale Dunbar, Winthrop High School hockey coach and NHL agent. Always fantastic listening to his point of view on hockey, and he has such a love for the game and a love for teaching the game as well. So we appreciate his input always. And we also appreciate the input of Mike Grenier, our basketball insider and sports journalist extraordinaire. Mike, welcome back.
It's always nice to be back, especially the playoffs. This is the most fun you have all year, I think, you know?
You know, it's funny. Dale and I was talking to Dale about Saturday and Sunday. There were eight NHL playoff games, four in each day.
Yeah.
Four of them went into overtime, and three of those went into double overtime. And I don't usually watch anybody but the Bruins. And I caught sight of those channel hopping, and my God, what excitement. And I would imagine, I'm not a rabid basketball fan, but I'm guessing that I know you are, and I'm guessing that you get that same kind of rush when we get to this time of the year.
Oh, sure. I mean, Sunday night was a perfect example. You know, the Celtics had played earlier, the earlier game, and beat the Atlanta Hawks to take a 3-1 lead. The late game was the Denver Nuggets down in Minnesota, and they ended up going into overtime and losing to the Minnesota Timberwolves to make, you know, the Denver still comfortably ahead 3-1, but it was an exciting game. It goes to overtime, you know, all kinds of stuff happening, and it's been crazy in the playoffs. Look at the New York Knicks. New York Knicks are playing great.
Mm-hmm.
They're up 3-1 with the series going back to Cleveland, and, of course, the Celtics right now are in a comfortable position.
Before we get to specifics and start talking about things, I just kind of want to philosophize with you for a minute about being a sports fan. Because once again, I checked in on local Boston sports radio for a couple of minutes today, and I had to check right out again. This is such an exciting time for a fan. And I've been a fan of sports for a long time, you know, local sports, but, and consistently on, and I think it's on both stations, they find a way to find something negative, dwell on it, and get people to call in and get all heated up about it and talk negatively too. And I'm just, you know, I don't know if they certainly do it. The guys on one channel certainly do it with both the Celtics and the Bruins. And me, Mike, it's rare what we went through in the early part of the century to have all those championship teams.
Oh yeah.
But I used to get joy. Mike, I came to Massachusetts as a senior in high school in 65. That's how old I am. And I could go to a Red Sox game on a Friday night. 2 minutes before game time, for $2, I could sit behind home plate.
That's right.
And I enjoyed the game.
Yeah. You know, and of course, it's funny, the young Red Sox fans don't really recall, or even the younger Patriots fans don't really recall how awful
yes, they were.
The Sox and Patriots were in the 60s,
yep.
And 70s, and except for a year or two in the 80s or whatever. But those two teams, and we followed them pretty religiously, they were terrible. And, you know, the Patriots, of course, you know, once Belichick came aboard, and of course they had a cup of coffee when Bill Parcells coached them and they went to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he quit on them the week of the game, basically.
Yep.
But at least he got them to turn around the program. He turned the culture around the program, and then gradually it got even better. And so young Patriots fans only know the championship dynasty, the six championships. And young Red Sox fans only think of the World Series from the years 2000 on up. But you and I got to live through the very bad seasons that the Red Sox had. I so enjoyed, you mentioned 1965, but I went to a lot of games as a high school kid in 1967.
Okay, yep.
Which of course was the magical, you know, summer of 67 when the Red Sox had finished ninth place 1966 and then mm-hmm. turn around and win the pennant in 1967 to go on to the World Series. It was such a high for us as high school kids, right?
Or absolutely
young college kids to be able to go follow that team. So but those great seasons were few and far between until the year 2000 or so.
Well, the thing is, again, talking with Coach Dunbar, if you maybe I'm going a little overboard, but if you played a sport at any level, you can appreciate professional athletes, major league athletes, even if they're not superstars and even if they're not winning, but you can appreciate what they're doing as long as they're putting the effort in. That's the only time I don't care about stuff like when Kyrie quit on the Celtics, that kind of thing. I don't get that. But you can appreciate and watch the other team. I mean, when the Yankees come in, God, I used to marvel at, who was the relief pitcher? Now I can't even think of his name. Oh, but he was so good. And when he did his final farewell tour, he got a standing ovation at Fenway. He's
yeah.
And Jorge Posada, I loved him. Joe Judge, you watch him hit the ball. Now I hate the Yankees, but damn, you can appreciate. I just wish that people. No, I guess I'm not going to tune into sports radio. I guess is what I'm saying, because I love watching sports. I love, you know, and there's so much positive in it, even if your team loses.
That's right. That's right. I mean, even though the Celtics lost game 3 of the playoffs, it was an exciting game to watch. They were in it all the way.
Yeah.
And they lost in the final couple of minutes. You kind of came away from it thinking, okay, they lost, but they're still up 2 games. But it was an exciting game. And then, you know, last night, Sunday night, when they took a 3-1 lead in the series, you know, the Atlanta Hawks were down by 10, 12 points all night. And then they made a run at it to get it down to 4. And of course, the Celtics came up with some really good defensive plays, and you know, thank goodness for Robert Williams last night. We talk about him a lot and how he doesn't play, but last night he was magnificent with the 13 points and the 15 rebounds, and his timely presence on defense made a huge difference in that game.
And he has played what, 3 games in a row now?
Right, right, and you know, coming off the bench, and that's okay because Derek White.
No.
Had a rough playoff series a year ago. He's still getting acclimated to the team, I think, and he wasn't totally comfortable, but he had pretty poor stats in last year's playoff. But he's going crazy. He's shooting 58% from the floor and 52% on threes, and he's averaging like 19 points a game. So, he's been a great addition to that team along with Malcolm Brogdon. So that's why the Celtics right now, as we mentioned just before we went on air here, they're set up nicely to wrap up this series against the Atlanta Hawks. Well, of course, they were heavily favored, but they're set up nicely not only because they have a 3-1 lead, but because they're back at the Boston Garden, home crowd, which has been I went to the first couple of home crowds, been fantastic at the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are they set up nicely for that, those two reasons, but Atlanta's second best scorer, 25 points per game, Dejounte Murray, who almost headbutted the official late last night, walking off the court. It was really kind of a pretty stupid move, obviously. Got himself suspended, so the Hawks will find themselves without a 25-point scorer in game 5 tomorrow. So they're really behind the 8-ball. And so the Celtics here should, you know, on paper, should walk all over them.
On paper, yep. That's the phrase, isn't it? You know, watching the Friday night game, and both the Bruins lost also, so it was a tough night. And I think the Red Sox probably did too, but whatever. The thing about last night's game was, the Celtics have needed and relied on Malcolm Brogdon coming off the bench, and he did not have one of his better games, and they were still able to win the game. And I don't think, you know, I think that was, he was kind of due to have a little off night, if you will. Did you notice that?
Oh yeah, sure. But he's still been overall.
It's been
terrific. And but to me, the best development was the play of Robert Williams in terms of his aggressiveness, blocking shots, coming up with rebounds. He made one hustle play there when the Hawks were still in it late in the game.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown, who's no stranger to turnovers, of course. Jaylen Brown had a turnover and the ball was rolling around and the Hawks guy got it and Robert Williams hit the floor and knocked the ball back towards the baseline to Jaylen Brown, who ended up with the dunk.
Yeah, that was a great play.
Yeah,
great
it was a big play, and it was a highlight reel play, but it also was a deflating play for the Atlanta Hawks, who maybe if they got in possession and hit a three, they would have got the lead down to 4 or 3 points or something like that. So it was a huge play, and, you know, Robert Williams doesn't get an assist on that. It's a hustle point. You know? And he went to the floor willingly, smashing the ball back towards the baseline and, you know, right into the hands of Jaylen Brown, who completed the play. So, you know, that to me, that was the most encouraging development.
I think it's called a Tommy point.
Yeah, we definitely call that a Tommy point, you know. And he played extremely well last night. We have to hope that continues because, obviously, on the horizon, should the Celtics win Tuesday night in Game 5, the Philadelphia 76ers have been resting already for a few days. And Embiid is, quote, injured, and Doc Rivers, who knows what kind of mind games. I mean, we know how clever Doc Rivers is. Great coach with the Celtics, won a championship in 2008. And he's saying that Joel Embiid is only 50%, quote, at best right now. But, Can we really believe that? I guess we'd find out Saturday, which is the projected first game one of that series if the Celtics win tomorrow night.
Yeah, we can talk about that in a second. I want to sort of just kind of finish up the last two games because we haven't talked in a while. And I don't know what I had lost my concentration or something. I was doing something else, and I came back and sat down, and I saw Jaylen Brown without the mask on. And I said, wow, what's this all about? And then it sort of to be a superstition thing for him. You know, afterwards, he said, I don't know what happened, but I caught on fire afterwards.
That's right. You know, I think he was like 1-for-6 from the floor or something to start out the game last night.
Yeah.
And he took the mask off, and he went 11-for-15 from the floor the rest of the way. And he finished with 31. And I'll tell you what, if you look at it from objective viewpoint, you say, well, you know, Jaylen Brown had 31 and Jason Tatum had 31, so therefore they had equal impact. No. In my estimation, Rick, Jaylen Brown won that game for them last night because he was taking it to the basket,
and
he was consistent through the four quarters, whereas Jason Tatum, going into the fourth quarter, I remember distinctly checking it after three quarters. He was 4-for-13 from the floor, 1-for-9 on threes, or 1-for-8 on threes. He was having a horrible game.
Okay.
And they certainly needed his output in the fourth quarter, and he gave it to them. I think he scored like 16 points in the fourth quarter to finish with 31. But Jaylen Brown was by far the more consistent player last night. And he, you know, once he took that mask off in particular, he was a force. And who knows, the mask, like you said, could be a superstition thing. Or he was due to take it off at some point. I think his face has healed. He was just probably comfortable with it. He had a lot of good games while wearing the mask. Last night it wasn't working for him, so he decided to change the look. Who knows why these guys do things?
Oh, yeah.
Superstitions, whatever. But it worked, and the Celtics are now in great shape.
Mm-hmm. I just remember the name of the Yankee I loved to hate and loved him, Mariano Rivera.
Oh, one of the all-time great.
All class.
All class, no doubt about it, all class. A great pitcher, a classy individual. He was a tremendous representative of the Yankees and the American League and
Absolutely.
All of baseball. Really,
yep.
He Hall of Fame career, obviously. He's just a fantastic. And he respected his opponents. And remember he came out after the Red Sox had won their first World Series. And I think Rivera had given up a big home run in the postseason the previous fall.
Yeah.
And the Red Sox fans were kind of on him in a good-natured way. And Rivera went to home plate, as introduced by the Yankees, and he was laughing sort of like along with the Red Sox fans saying, yeah, I know I messed up last fall.
Yeah.
And it just showed his total class. He wasn't offended by the jeering, and it was like sort of good-natured jeering because Red Sox fans were still gleeful for winning a title.
That's right.
But, you know, Rivera was total class, was total class his entire career.
All right, now speaking of class, I want you to critique for me the play of Al Horford because while he was a dynamo on defense and I guess rebounding, he didn't score. Now, is that by design or do you think he's getting tired?
No, I don't think he's getting tired. I think he showed a lot of energy. I just think they haven't put him in a position to score. He only took like 3 or 4 shots. This whole series, I'd have to double-check to see how many shots he's taken. But he's averaging just 3 or 4 shots per game. And he hasn't been that guy who they spot up for a three-pointer in the wing or the baseline or whatever. For whatever reason, other guys are being asked to score, and Al Horford is being asked to play defense and to run the floor and to rebound. And I think I mentioned last week that in a couple of those early games against the Hawks, I thought Al Horford was hustling more than the young guys. So he's playing his role, and he accepts whatever role they give him. And he's not complaining. I mean, at his stage, he'll be age 37 soon, I believe, during these playoffs. He only wants to win a championship because he knows he's towards the end of the line. He's on the back nine of his career. Who knows if he's going to play next year. Even if they win it this year, he might step away. And I'm glad you mentioned him, and I'm glad I mentioned attitude, because yesterday the Knicks played great, and they took a 3-1 lead in their series, but their second-best player, because Jalen Brunson is really a great player right now, and he's Julius Randle, who's been a big scorer for the Knicks the last 3 or 4 years, he didn't play down the stretch. Tom Thibodeau found a winning formula, and he didn't play Julius Randle in the fourth quarter, and Randle left Madison Square Garden without speaking to the media, and he was in a huff. Mm-hmm. He was throwing a little bit of a mini tantrum because he didn't play in the fourth quarter in a victory. Mm-hmm. They won the game. Isn't that supposed to be more important than your individual minutes? I mean, they were talking about on TNT last night, you know, Charles Barkley in particular was really hounding Julius Randle for not being happy with the win and being more upset that he didn't get the playing time.
Well, I think that's important because we haven't seen that. We saw a little bit of it with Peyton Pritchard earlier this year.
Right.
A little tiny bit, and he wants to play. You know, we get that. But now here in the playoffs, he's not playing, and most of the bench guys are not playing. I can't believe how Grant Williams is being so supportive. He wants to get out there. So I think they have their eye on the prize, and I think if Mazzulla can maintain that, they'll be in good shape.
Right, and I bet you that Mazzulla's had some private conversations in the locker room with Grant Williams, because I think Grant Williams will be looking ahead to the Philadelphia series. I think Grant Williams will be asked to play Embiid quite a bit, because you need more than one player to guard Embiid, and it won't be Horford all the time, and it will not be Robert Williams all the time. It'll be Grant Williams as well, because he's a big, strong kid. He doesn't have nearly the height of Embiid, but he's had to do it earlier this season against Embiid, and he's done okay. So I think Grant Williams is probably, it's good for him to get some rest now, because I think he's going to be tested in a big way. If I'm not mistaken, if I read it correctly, because I think I really feel that Grant Williams will have to play a much bigger role against Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're familiar with Philadelphia, and we can talk about it a little bit later. I want you to talk about what else you've seen in the playoffs.
Well, you know, we've talked about the Celtics. You know, I think the Knicks have been a real surprise. You know, that was an even series to begin with, like, you know, a 4-5 in the seedings. But the Cleveland Cavaliers had home court advantage, and they did not take advantage of it. The Knicks won one of the games in Cleveland, and they swept the two games at Madison Square Garden. And now they're in a great shape. So the disappointing player for Cleveland is a real superstar-type player, Donovan Mitchell, who shot 5-for-18 yesterday. And he had more turnovers than baskets. I think he had, like, 6 turnovers and 5 baskets. So he's in a bit of a funk offensively, so they need him if they're going to climb back into the series. And even if they win Game 5 in Cleveland, that only makes it 3-2, and they go back to New York. And New York has had a real strong crowd supporting them here in these first two games at Madison Square Garden. So, you know, I kind of see the Knicks winning out, whether it takes 5 games or 6. I see them advancing. Denver Nuggets have played great. They're up 3-1. They lost an overtime game in Minnesota last night. They're in great shape. The Milwaukee Bucks, who play tonight, now this is a stupendously important game for the Milwaukee Bucks, playing the Miami Heat tonight. They're down 2-1. Their superstar, Giannis Antetokounmpo, has missed the last 2 games with that contusions on his back. And they have to win. They're in Miami tonight. If Miami wins tonight, they'll be up 3-1 with the luxury of having at least a home game for Game 6 if they should lose in Milwaukee in Game 5. So the Miami Heat, who didn't play well at all throughout the season, 44-38, you know, just 6 games over .500, and then they lost the play-in game to the Atlanta Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to win a second. They had a second opportunity. That's how they ended up being the number 8 seed and playing Milwaukee. Jimmy Butler is playing out of his mind. He's just been playing great, 30-35 points a game. He's shooting it extremely well. You know, they've gotten contributions from the Adebayo, of course, the big man in front. And, I mean, they're doing this without Tyler Hero, a guy who averages 24-25 a game, who broke his hand early in the series. So you got to give the Miami a lot of credit, and tremendous pressure right now on the Milwaukee Bucks, who, even in my own eyes, I favored them to win it all throughout the season.
Yes, you have, yep.
Yep, and because of their top-line players, they're struggling right now, and they need a win tonight. And I got to give props, though, to our local kid, Pat Connaughton, scored a career playoff high of 22 the other night when they finally won a game against Miami. And then he came back with 11 points, shot it very well in the Game 4 loss. So Game 3 loss. So they need to win tonight. I mean, the Milwaukee Bucks are really up against it right now, because they're favored not just by myself, but many pundits and experts and basketball guys throughout the country. So they're really, really they're behind the eight ball right now, and they really have to win tonight.
All right, that's a game that's on tonight that should be interesting to follow. What about the Kings and the Warriors? That looks like an interesting series.
It's a great series. That's a great series. It sort of lived up to its billing. Sacramento is perhaps the best scoring team in the NBA, and that's held true throughout these first round of the playoffs here, they are averaging around 123, 124, 125 points a game. They won the first two games at home in Sacramento, where they've been strong. And I've mentioned throughout the year that the Golden State Warriors have been a really poor road team, and that held true for the first couple of games in Sacramento. Now, then they go back to Golden State, they go back to San Francisco, and the Warriors held court there. But, you know, last night's game, they won by 1 point. Lucky to win it at home, and of course, Draymond Green was suspended for a game. They won that one in a big way in game three, but last night they had Draymond Green back, and they had to hold on for dear life. They beat Sacramento. So I think that series is a toss-up, Rick, because I really believe that Sacramento's strong enough to win at home in Game 5. And they're strong enough, really, with their scoring power to win a Game 6 at Golden State. So to me, though, that's a 50-50 series because obviously the Warriors have that championship pedigree, and they aren't going to give it up easily. They're defending champions. They aren't going to give it up. They're not. There's no way they're going to just, you know, lie low. They're going to give it their all. But I don't know if they can overcome Sacramento's offensive firepower.
Well, it is interesting, I'll tell you. The whole thing, I don't know that it's going to form so far, you know, to the Vegas betting line, because there have been some upsets, and it makes a great fodder. I think that, you know, the fact that the Celtics lost one game already to Florida is like, you know, that raises some eyebrows, and I don't know. To Atlanta. I'm getting my teams mixed up here.
Right. You're on the Bruins.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't be?
Yeah. So you know, it's cool, and I think that, you know, the Celtics. The one thing I've seen in this playoff series, going back to them for a second, is that when they turn the defensive heat on, they are really in lockdown mode. They can stop Atlanta if they want to, but
right.
To sustain that for 60 minutes, or excuse me, 48
Eight.
Minutes,
yeah.
I don't know if that's too tall a task in any series, but they did it last year with pretty much the same personnel, and you know, as the series goes on, the series plural go on, they're going to have to find a way to do that, I think, if they're serious about winning the championship, because we know they're good in scoring. But they can be better on defense.
Right, no doubt. And you know what? I thought I saw a major difference in Game 4 down in Atlanta last night compared to even the first three games. Even though they won the first two games at the Garden,
mm-hmm.
I thought the Celtics' defense, they kind of played a casual, they weren't intense on defense because they knew they could score anytime they wanted against Atlanta. So they won by big scores, okay? They scored a lot of points. I didn't see much defense in Game 3, the game that Atlanta won by the Celtics. However, they came out really with much more tenacity
mm-hmm.
in Game 4 last night. And even though the Hawks hung close, I thought, you know, the Celtics led for the last 44 minutes of that game. So 44 of the 48 minutes they led. And I think that came from initially how good they were on defense, how intense they were on defense, and it translated to them playing well on offense as well. So I think Joe Mazzulla must have gotten their ear after Game 3 when they lost and said, you know what, guys, we have to pick up the intensity and pick up the rotations better and play better individual defense, better team defense. And they followed through, I thought, very well in Game 4. And that's the reason they're in a great position right now through four games. And we should mention Marcus Smart, speaking of defense, because last night, and I think Jaylen Brown, the postgame, referenced Marcus Smart's defense and his overall play. And one of the major reasons they won Game 4 in Atlanta. Marcus Smart, not only is he playing very good defense, but he's getting pounded physically, as usual.
Yeah,
he gets back up and keeps playing, whether it's an ankle or a knee or a thigh. He just somehow, every time you think he's going to go off the floor, how many times, Rick, have we watched Marcus Smart, the last couple of years even in the playoffs, get banged up, and you look like he's not going to get up off the floor, and it looks like maybe he's going to go to the locker room, and he just kind of shakes it off, and he stays in the game.
Well, there have been times when he goes to the locker room and then comes back, so yeah.
That's right. And I think he's been terrific in this series, not just defensively, but he's shooting it like 40% on three-pointers and like 47% overall. He's shooting the ball much better than in the regular season, so that bodes well, too, for the remaining series that they'll be playing. So, you know, right now you have five or six guys. The shooting percentages have been way up for the Celtics in this play, these first four games against Atlanta. And I know it's going to be more difficult if and when they play Philly, but it bodes well when all these guys are shooting well together. I'm talking about, you know, Jaylen Brown. Tatum is shooting 40% on threes right now. I mentioned Derek White, 58% overall, 52% on threes. That's crazy. You know, Brogdon is actually shooting it pretty well overall, although his three-point shooting is down in the first four games. But overall, he's been shooting it okay. And, you know, of course, Robert Williams, he doesn't take outside shots, so his percentage is always going to be high because he's making dunk shots. So, but like someone said, even though that Robert Williams can only dunk the ball, I think it was Jaylen Brown again who mentioned that it makes the game so much easier for the other four guys on the floor when he gets a couple of dunks.
Because absolutely.
That means that Jason Tatum's not having to dribble the ball for 16 or 17 seconds and launching a three-pointer.
Yeah.
Now, if they find, you know, Robert Williams for a dunk, it takes all the hard work out of it, and that's what you need in a 48-minute game.
All right, my last comment is on the entertainment value. Watching Scalabrine and Eddie House broadcast the game, I got to tell you, I love Mike Gorman, and I also enjoyed listening to these two guys.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, Scalabrine, of course, is a homer, much like the late Tommy Heinsohn was.
Yep.
But Eddie House has some really, I mean, of course, he was a big part of that championship team in 2008, coming off the bench and hitting threes. He knows the game inside and out, and I love his insight. I love his insights into the game. He really knows the game. And during the course of the game, he'll point out good things and bad things. And he really can project the game. He has a really good vision of the game, I guess is what I'm saying, as a broadcaster. And he's not afraid to give his opinions, good and bad. You know, whether it's positive or negative, he's in the... He knows the game extremely well, so you got to respect that. I've always liked him an awful lot.
And Scalabrine won't really, I don't think he's ever criticized the Celtic play, but what I do like, among other things, is the fact when the opponent makes a great play, he will say that, you know, and he'll give credit to it. So I'm learning about the game as we go along, because they're telling you how difficult some of these things are, as you mentioned, you know, and I'm surprised at how smooth the broadcast has actually been. So it's good.
Right. And I much prefer, sometimes when you have a choice of watching the national broadcast or the local broadcast, I much prefer the local broadcast because they know the Celtics players much better.
Yep.
And the national broadcast, I don't know. It seems like they're just more concerned about entertaining a national audience, so they don't have quite the insight that the local broadcasters do, you know?
I was very disappointed in Kevin Harlan. I used to be a great fan of his. And he was broadcasting one of the games, and it was exactly that. It was like he was on stage performing.
Right. He tends to get even a routine basket. He treats it as if it's the winning basket of a seventh game.
Yeah, and if you have hyperbole all the time, then it's not hyperbole. So, you know, I mean, it's...
Reggie Miller is pretty good, though.
Oh, he is, yep.
Reggie Miller tends to be able to criticize players on both teams and point out mistakes as well as good things, and... he's extremely knowledgeable, Reggie Miller. So I like him a lot.
Yeah. All right. So the next game, when do they play? Wednesday?
So Tuesday.
Tuesday.
All right.
They play Tuesday. Okay.
So if they can get that one over with, Rick, we're looking at a great series, I think, against the Philadelphia 76ers, starting on Saturday at the Boston Garden, of course. Celtics have home court. And there'll be game two will be a week from tonight on a Monday. So I'm hoping the Celtics can pull this off tomorrow night, because I'm super excited about a Philadelphia Celtics matchup.
Yep, and the young ones will learn about the great rivalry between Boston and Philadelphia.
Oh yeah.
Love
they should
it.
Trot out Julius Erving to throw up the ceremonial jump ball or something.
They could, right? Yeah. Oh, that'd be great to see Doctor. And hopefully they'll spell his name right when they put it on. God.
That's right.
On Philadelphia TV. Jeepers.
Yes.
Hey, Mike, it's been a pleasure, and you be well. We'll continue this as the playoffs go on.
All right, Rick. It's always great.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
Right.
Bye-bye. That is sports journalist Mike Grenier, our basketball insider. So that's it. It has been a quick hour and a pleasure talking with Dale Dunbar about hockey, and Mike Grenier about basketball. If you have anything you'd like to send along to us, let us know at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. Let me go over the scores again, because we have one additional score in baseball. It's Marblehead 15 and Manchester Essex 0, Boston College High School 16, St. John's Prep 2, Lynn Classical 12, Chelsea 0. In girls' Cross, Pawtucket 18, Hamilton Wenham 10, Georgetown over North Reading 18-6, and Manchester Essex beating Triton 15-4. And in softball, just the one score that we still have, Peabody 8 and Marblehead 2. So that'll do it. On behalf of Bill Newell, Tim Kearns, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore, wishing you a very pleasant good evening. And we'll talk to you later. This is MSO News Sports.